Good morning, Vikings fans.
Greatest podcast music ever. Sorry, go ahead. Step down your touchdown.
No, but it's true. It applies so deeply that I'm almost offended by it. This is Morning Joe's, the fixed audio edition. I apologize for last week. We had some technical difficulties, but I do believe we ironed those out. As usual, all signs point to me in the fault department. Speaking of me, ooh, that's a good segue. I am Joe Johnson, owner of PurplePTSD.com, VikingsTerritory.com, and PurpleTerritoryRadio.com, here with the formerly muted Joe Oberle, who is the editor of the Purple Territory Media Network. I would like to say that last week was an accident, but I think subconsciously I just wanted to dominate the entire show, and so
that's actually good, because as the song says, I don't know nothing. So.
We're almost to real football, it feels like. We have the first preseason game on Friday. I did my appearance, my weekly appearance on KLGR Radio's The Scoop, which is a radio station out of Redwood Falls, Minnesota. And I, just like an hour ago, actually, and I mentioned that I felt like it was good scheduling on the NFL's behalf. Not that people wouldn't be interested in preseason in general. I've always been a huge preseason nerd myself, but having the Saints just feels like there's going to be a little bit more passion, perhaps on the fan side more than the player side, wouldn't you say?
Because of the matchup?
Well, just that and how much we hate the Saints.
Yeah, that's what I... Yeah, I think this is a great opening preseason game for that reason. Unfortunately, I worry about how much we're going to get of the starters. I'm not as big a preseason Rube as others. I definitely see there's things you can get out of it. I like watching into the second half. By the time the fourth quarter starts, I'm thinking, okay, these guys aren't going to make the team, and I kind of, check out a little bit. But there's some battles for this in this camp, and there's some things to watch throughout. And I think especially with the quarterback situation, it's going to stretch into the fourth quarter, whereas you are going to want to stick around and see that. I wrote a story this week kind of previewing the preseason, and I talked about that. I mean, there's enough stuff going on that I don't think you can just check out, because there's going to be some things they're going to be looking at. And I think watching what they do and how much people play is really going to start telling us signs what the coaching staff is looking at, what they're thinking about, and what they're going to do going forward.
Definitely. There's also some former Viking intrigue there. There's a handful of players that are on the Saints. It almost feels like a Vikings-Seahawks situation, where they're just a lot of castaways from the Vikings are now playing for the Saints.
Ironically, Joe, sorry to jump in, but I was just driving here on the way home from somewhere, and I was listening to Zimmer on the radio, and they reminded us about how much he and Sean Payton are friends, despite all the stuff that's going on here, all the intrigue. These guys coached together in Dallas a long time ago, and they're very good friends. They're good competitors. Zimmer was saying how his daughters babysat his Payton's kids, or vice versa, or something like that, and how they go out to dinner and all this stuff. And so they are good friends and intense competitors. So that brings a little bit more to it too. It's I find it really interesting. It dawned on me, boy, they really scooped up a number of former Vikings, didn't they?
That can't be a coincidence, really, based on what you just said. I think that not so much that Zimmer might have told him things that he's taking advantage of, but more so that maybe he respects Zimmer's and Spielman's eye for talent on a level that he thinks that, well, these guys must be good if Zimmer liked them. Some of them bother me a little bit more than others, and I also don't know really how to feel about Zimmer being friends with Sean Payton. I loathe that guy. they are kind of good polar opposites, or yin and yang, not so much in regards to cheating, but one's an offensive mastermind, the other one is a defensive one. So, yeah, again, I think it's a really awesome first matchup. I wonder how much, and we can start with this topic from the news file, how much Zimmer will keep the number one defense out there if he's unhappy with them and he wants them to, you know, his comments basically were that the offense had this grit and intensity that the defense wasn't matching, that he feels like perhaps they're complacent. Because I think the quote was, we're a number top five defense every year, so maybe they just feel like we've done this before, they're going through the motions, so on and so forth. I think the start to last season is still fresh in Zimmer's mind, and he realizes how important a strong start from this defense is. So he might keep them out there a little bit longer to send that message through.
That's a good point. You know, that was the first question out of the gate this morning in his presser, last press before he leaves for the game. And he did say that they had responded to what he said. He says, you know, I've been around these guys for 6 years, and they know me, and they know when I want to see more out of them, and when I need to put the pedal down a little bit. And he said, like one of the players said, the coach is usually right. So they kind of, he said, they responded well, and they've since stepped it up. And you know, it also comes, you know, it's probably true, there probably is a little complacency there. They know the defense, most of the guys know the defense, only the young guys are learning it. And on the other side of the ball, the offense has got another new offensive system, they've got another new coordinator, they've got you know, they've got a season in the rearview mirror where they didn't perform the way they needed to be, so they are probably a little bit more intense and a little bit, you know, the defense is maybe perhaps just ramping up slowly and going to start peaking when the season starts. I guess I don't blame them for that, but Zimmer does.
Totally, but it's a fine line too, because you don't, I mean, especially with the way that the rules are now, with the lack of two-a-days and the lack of physicality, it's kind of a fine line between intensity and perhaps like accidentally hurting somebody. Like if the offense is different, I feel, just because there's, like, on the defense, most of the positions are solidified. The offense has some newer guys on the line. You have newer guys at the tight end position. You have a bunch of guys fighting for the third, fourth, and fifth wide receiver position. So you're going to have more intensity because guys are kind of fighting for their lives a little bit.
Yep.
But so when you have all these starters, veteran starters on defense, it's hard to balance complacency or intensity with that, because you're thinking, okay, these guys know they have a position, they're just kind of getting the rust off, but they're not like taking guys' heads off either. And I know that's not what Zimmer meant, but it's just hard to delineate, like figure out how to better do that without that turning into maybe harder hits or running faster. But I think we've talked about this for sure on the show before, and a point that I wanted to make about Zimmer saying that to the media. There was a lot of people online kind of saying Zimmer, you know, he shoots off at the mouth about his players. These things should be internal, the Ricky Ellison situation. And I think we both agree on this, that Zimmer wasn't a slip of the tongue. I think it's more of a logical, like, okay, I've said something to them, it didn't work, so now if I go to the media, I know they'll get peppered with questions and they'll maybe take it a little more seriously. So I think the media aspect of it is a little bit more of a logical, like, final move for Zimmer to get his point across, as opposed to, like, some emotional slip of the tongue that he regrets, I guess, if I'm making any sense.
I would tend to agree with that. I'm not sure that I'm completely down with the whole idea of airing any dirty laundry in the media, even though as a member of the media, you like when he does that. I think we did talk about it last week. The best, you know, maybe I think it is contrived on his part to some degree, and maybe it's, you know, if he's not reaching him one way, he's trying another. So there it is. Just so he doesn't. I mean, he's gone too far before. I know that he really ticked off some players with Anthony Barr a few years back, and he's done it in other. You know, you mentioned Red Ellison, that whole thing, but.
Sherry Floyd, even, I felt was kind of bad,
right,
because it was like his nerves were severed. But I think no one knew that at the time, so it was more of a, he's taking too long to come back sort of thing.
Yeah, you wonder if it's a Nick Easton thing as well, because he went and got a different, a second opinion on his injury, whatever it was, and then ended up having surgery and missing all of last year, and now he's gone. So who knows if there was some bad blood there as well. But Zimmer, I think he's a bit old school, and when he likes, you know, rub some dirt on it and get back out here. But he also knows he's also a modern day coach who understands too. So maybe you know he's trying to walk the line the best he can, and that's the case. You touched on something earlier when you're talking about getting fired up and hard hits, and we might see them. I had this very ugly feeling on the way here to this deal. I was thinking, you know, listening to them, and they're talking about Teddy. I said it would break my heart if someone hit Teddy and hurt him.
Yeah.
And ended his career. And I thought, God, I bet you these guys it would break their hearts as well, because they're all good friends with him. So you wonder if subconsciously they won't they'll treat him like he's got a red jersey on, and the Vikings will get their hats handed to him.
You just slice and then dice, and that is going to be a really interesting dynamic.
It is.
It's emotionally for fans. I mean, there's this huge contingent of people who just on an emotional level love Teddy and have refused to let that whole situation go. You still hear people talking about it. I think it was Sean Borman, the managing editor of Vikings Territory, like 2 weeks ago, that put out a tweet that was basically like, newsflash, Teddy hasn't been on the team since this date. Like, I understand people love him, I love him too, but can we just talk about like reality for a second? It's almost like the never Trumpers. It's like the always Teddies.
You know, I'm not that bad, but I have these feelings. He was the greatest guy, and the team loved him. And, you know, and these guys are human. You've got to give the players some opportunity to, you know, still be friends with the guys they do. And I think the fans fell in love with them too. I'm not saying I did have a thought. I said, well, you know, where would we be if that injury had never happened? Would Teddy just be slicing and dicing for the Vikings right now? And last year, he would have just been on an ascent from that wide left field goal where they should have won his first playoff game to where he's considered one of the top quarterbacks in the league. But, boy, that's not the way it happened. And, you know, there is some regret there. I feel it. I sense it, just because you love cheering for players who are great people, and there has never been a bad word said about Teddy. So,
was he good with the media too, like open and engaging and all of that?
He was open, and he would answer your questions. He was very nice, very congenial, but he was very I can't think of the word, but he knew what he was doing, so he wasn't giving up very much at all.
Oh, coached not in the marketing realm.
Yeah, not so much that. He was just really reserved, and you know, not effusive in what he said, and kind of quiet, you know, and careful. He was careful, so
okay.
You know, he never gave you. I mean, you know, when Case Keenum came out there, you might get a little something from him. There was just a little bit of an edge to him, and you never know if you might get something. And there are other players that, you know, they might not necessarily cut open a vein, but will say something once in a while. Teddy was pretty conservative and reserved in what he said. I mean, he was not going to make any gaffes in front of the media. And as someone that you're sitting out there asking him questions, you like to have both. You know, you like to have a nice guy, but you also like to have him, you know, say something really juicy that you can you can take and run
give
a story.
Give you a little bit of meat. I've said this before on the show, but I should put this out there because we have a lot of new listeners every week, thanks to iHeartRadio. One of the main reasons that I started the site was I was really a big Vikings Redditor from before Favre came. That's where I kept like my eye on all the Favre stuff, because I was like 6 blocks away from Winter Park at the time working, so I was waiting to go over there. So I've been there. I was there a really long time, and I was kind of combative in regards to my takes or arguing with people. So I was getting run out of there anyway. But one of the bigger things that was kind of me versus Reddit, or the site versus Reddit, was the Teddy thing. And my take was, I think, relatively measured, but anyone that has followed Vikings online, anything, Twitter or Reddit, they'll understand how this works. My point was that he wasn't elite, but he had the potential to be. But the take was that he was already basically up in the upper echelon of quarterbacks, and I just felt like he didn't have the right deep ball. I know when we interviewed Tommy Kramer at the Mermaid that time, in between him singing country songs from start to finish, he talked about Teddy's throwing motion and how he kind of had not really like a Vince Young sidearm, but enough of a sidearm to where he wasn't getting air under the ball for deep balls, and that's why him and Mike Wallace never clicked, so on and so forth. The day that he got injured, I wrote an article about Teddy. I think the headline was, "I'll admit it, Teddy is the future or the franchise or something."
And it was jinxed him.
I know. It was based on the last two preseason games. He was just like dropping dimes everywhere.
He was.
And he just looked so ready for that season. And his deep ball was just immaculate. And I was like, I'm not going to even deny it. And then the injury happened. So I have a relatively complex history with Teddy, but I understand where that comes from, too. Like, my generation never having a franchise quarterback and you know, Dante Culpepper really being the closest we got. And then he, you know, similarly had that catastrophic knee injury, and that was the end of it. So I get it. But at the same time, I wonder, and I want your take on this. You know, obviously that injury was bad. Like, he almost lost his leg in general. But do you think there's any, outside of him rehabbing that, like, there's any reason why he isn't starting in the league right now? Like, well, is he going to be a backup forever now, or like?
That's a great question. I've thought about it as well, because he's still around. Teams have still scooped him up. I mean, this is his second team, right, since he's left.
Yeah, he was in the on the Jets for a while.
Yeah, and he has worked his tail back. He's sitting behind a surefire Hall of Famer who is going to have all the passing records in the league when he finally does retire. So I think that's the only thing from him having a really level crack at starting down there. And in fact, that's, Zimmer mentioned that in his presser. He said that Sean Payton says Teddy's great. He's playing well, and you know he's. He's everything's going good with him. So I think, you know, they also have that gadget quarterback, that Joe
Taysom Hill.
Yeah, behind him. So I mean, I think when Drew Brees does retire, that you know, they'll keep Teddy around to have a battle and see if they can do it, if they can make it work between, you know, or have a battle between those guys and see who's gonna end up being it. But you know, I'm going to have to reserve judgment until I see him get a good chunk of playing time on Friday and really make that determination. The word I've heard of coming out of Saints camp is that he has been dropping dimes again. He's looked really good. Yeah.
Oh, no.
It sounded so familiar, so it was really funny for you to just say what you did about him before he got injured, because that's exactly the way he was described down there. So, and it will be bittersweet. It'll be part of me that says, "Yes, good for him. He's a great guy. If he's all the way back, and bad for us that he's not in a uniform." So,
can you imagine the shitstorm that will come on Vikings internet next week if Cousins has one series and is bad, and then Teddy has like four touchdowns? Ugh.
God.
I mean, good for him. I could also foresee a situation where if he has a strong preseason and a team like the Vikings in 2016 has some sort of injury that they might give up the farm to trade for Teddy as the starter.
Wouldn't that be something?
Assuming that they're like, if you know, I don't know, someone gets hurt, Russell Wilson or something. But good for him. You know, like I've never had any.
I'm sorry to answer your question. I think there's a shot that he could start in this league again. You just wonder about his ability is the biggest thing. I mean, you know, I suspect they wouldn't have him out there if mechanically he's not right. He might not. Yeah. He's not what he's ever going to be what he was, but I'm physically. But I think the biggest issue would be you're putting your hopes and dreams in a guy who's got a glass knee or something. You know, a glass.
Yeah, and you got to wonder too how that injury happened. Like if there was some underlying, like, birth defect, or like he just was, you know what I mean? Like it was so strange. Like Culpepper, you could see it. Chris Gamble hit him from the side and it made sense. But for a guy that was just, you know, jogging or running in a non-contact injury to cut and then almost lose his leg to amputation, seems like there had to be some underlying issue there. Speaking of injuries, Aviante Collins was carted off the field and everyone held their breath earlier this week. It seems like the team is being relatively coy about his status. It sounds like he'll be back, but they haven't said when. They haven't really said, you know, what happened, but it sounds like it's a day-to-day thing, maybe? I don't know if you've heard anything different.
I think the only thing I read somewhere was that they believe what they found out is that he avoided a major injury, and it might be day-to-day, but I shouldn't say. I don't have it in front of me, and I may be misspeaking, but I thought that's what I read. The other key that I would think, they haven't signed a tackle behind him, have they? I mean, they haven't gone out. They haven't gone out and backed it up. So I mean, that's always a key there. If they go and grab somebody off the waiver wire or grab somebody that's sitting at home, then you know they need the depth and they're not counting on them. So I think it's a good sign, perhaps, that if they haven't done that, that maybe they're thinking he is going to return.
Yeah, I know they signed that veteran corner whose name both escapes me and I cannot pronounce.
Obinjaibara.
Yeah, that's you nailed it. But yeah, let me. I felt
which makes you concerned about the depth at the defensive backs that they went out and did that. So
yeah, that's a major concern. I mean, I know Holton Hill's been able to practice, and he, I believe, will be able to play on Friday, but that's a concern. Mike Hughes' recovery is a concern. It's just amazing for how much they've invested in this defensive backfield, how thin it is just based on that.
Yeah, and, you know, Holton Hill's gone for 8 games, but, you know, with anybody that sits out 8 games, it's probably 1 or 2 more before he's really up to speed. So essentially give him a 10-game suspension, because until you're back up playing a game, you're not ready for game speed. So it's like, you know, he'll come in, he'll come back at that point, but I don't think he'll be, you know, as good as he was last year until he gets back into it. You know, it's a shame.
And he showed, like, he the ability to fill in at a decent level, but he also showed some, like, he got picked on early by Aaron Rodgers, I believe, and that touchdown was scored, like, on his first play, and then after that he kind of got it together. So he seems like a guy that needs that time. I know the Vikings, they signed an offensive guard, that's who I was thinking of, a Samoan guy, Tiano Pupin Gatoa, but he's not a tackle, so there you go. So, yeah, we'll see. I'm a little bit worried about the corner position. But another position that at least is interesting, and that I think the Vikings releasing the depth chart, I think, is kind of a starting point. There's not a lot to derive from that outside of Treadwell status on the team, which we'll get to. But I'm getting a lot of conflicting reports out of camp for the backup quarterback spot. And I know you touched on this in your article, so I'll just kind of put this question out there and get your take on it. It sounds like Mannion started slow, but is looking really good. Reed Johnson, who owns Purple Rain News, who covers a lot of stuff for Vikings territory and Purple PTSD, compared him to Case Keenum in an article yesterday, basically saying that he could be the guy coming off the bench, God forbid, knock on drywall.
So they can't give him the whole offense then? Just kidding.
I knew there was a reason. You're my mentor. So I'm hearing Mannion's having this super strong camp, but then I'm also hearing that Jake Browning is just, speaking of dropping dimes, he's got this big arm and he's been doing really, really well. And so I hear from some people that maybe Browning could end up with the backup spot, which I find really hard to believe. I would assume that the Vikings will go into games with 2 quarterbacks, Mannion being the one, and then Browning will be like the practice squad guy, with Slaughter being the odd man out. Is that your take on it, or?
Well, you know, based on what, you know, and what I put in my piece, this is more just hearsay. You know, I hear all these people talking about Browning, and I see clips. I mean, guys from our sites have been out there at practice filming him, and they've been watching him after practice throwing long deep balls to one of the people there, and it sounds like there is a lot of steam over Browning, and if you were to bet now, given based on what we saw in OTAs when Slaughter was sitting on the sidelines holding the clipboard while the other guys were getting their looks, I'd say yes. But you know that they know what they have in Slaughter, and they need to see these other two guys in depth, before they can make an educated decision. If I were to hold a gun to me today, I would say it was just as how you would say it, because they've had Slaughter on the team for, 3 years? This is his third year?
Yeah.
And he hasn't progressed past the developmental stage. He has not, gotten on the field in a regular season game. I don't even think he's been active. I'm not sure. Maybe that's wrong. Maybe somewhere along the line he has a game. But, there's something holding him back. So if somebody all of a sudden starts grabbing eyes and flashing a little bit and shows this promise, and Browning had a great college career until he got injured and going into his senior year. So they're going to give him a huge look. And
yeah.
And I think Manning's going to be your backup because of his experience playing in the league. So
definitely. I think it's important to look at what you just said. I think if not for his senior year and the injuries, that he could have been a top, at least
got drafted
top three. Well, yes, but like a top three round type guy. I mean, he brought Washington to the college playoff his junior year, if I remember correctly. Like, they were super good. I think they lost one game, and he had incredible stats. And then things kind of went sideways. If you would have declared, you would have had a better chance after that season. But, I think they really do also like having a fresh guy every once in a while. Like Heineke, who's shown some value, at least in Carolina.
There's a lot to look at there, Joe, because it's a guy that, like you just described, how great he played for 3 years, got injured. And that doesn't mean his abilities go away.
Yeah.
I mean, that's somebody that you would want to develop in some form or fashion, and that other people missed on. It's like, okay, we got this opportunity, and the Vikings are always looking for new quarterbacks. You got to be, if you're a professional football team in this league, you better be, drafting a quarterback somewhere along the line and trying to bring him along. And if they know what they have in Slaughter, They could more easily expose him to the rest of the league than maybe Browner, who might be just a diamond in the rough here. That was a diamond, got roughed up, and now they got to shine him back up again.
More I read about him, the more I was amazed that he wasn't drafted in a league that needs quarterbacks, and B,
yes,
that I guess there is no B. B, that he had a really high ceiling. He definitely has a much higher ceiling than Slaughter, and it just feels like a Spielman thing to do, too. He always has that guy, but I do feel like he has the higher ceiling of any of the guys that they've had. I know, Heineke was a fan favorite because he had that missile of an arm, and it sounds like Browning has a really good arm, but also that he has the other pieces that you might need, so who knows? I mean, Cousins' contract is up after next year. You never know, but I'm a little excited to see him actually play. I think I don't think it's hyperbole to say that this might be the most interesting camp of my life. Like, just in terms of the quality of players and who they're going to take. And, I have a really strong feeling that when the Vikings make their moves to try to clear waivers to get guys on the practice squad, that we're going to end up losing five or six guys.
It stands to reason that... Yeah, that's a good point. Stands to reason with the way that the Saints poached players in free agency from this team, that they know what they're doing in drafting some players, and there's some value here. So, that could very well be. They could lose some guys at the bottom end of their roster as well.
I totally stole your take from last week, which was in terms of the wide receiver three position, which you covered in your article as well. It's a great article. People should check it out. It's on Vikings territory. You touched on this component, but you didn't put this take in there, even though we talked about it last week. The argument about Laquon Treadwell, cutting him and eating the $3.5 million dead cap, or keeping him. And I think the way you put it was that basically, if you keep him and you pay him that amount of money, it's like basically dead cap money anyway, because he's not going to contribute, and then you're going to miss out on that whoever that roster spot was would have been for otherwise. So you might as well just kind of bite the bullet, do it now, and then you can keep a guy like Bidette or Brandon Zylstra if you like what he does on special teams. And then let Treadwell go, which would be an astonishing failure for Treadwell, by the way.
Right. If you're keeping him just because your ego says we draft him in the first round and you got to give him another shot, then that's a wrong move. You know, you've got to really weigh what you're going to get out of him and what you're paying for and what you're giving up, and if that roster spot becomes more valuable than the five or the two or three snaps he gets per game. Really is. You know, you could get it from somewhere else. And I would say his days are numbered here, but I don't know.
You know, there's the way it looks with the depth chart and all the reports coming out of camp are that the third spot is BB's, basically. Yep. You have Jordan Taylor, who, you know, I think BB being the third guy dictates what happens at 4 and 5, assuming they keep 5 and not 6. BB's a smaller guy, but he's really quick. He's got incredible moves, good hands, like apparently this level of route running that the league has never seen before if you listen to Adam Thielen or other people. But he's only 5'9". So then you look at a guy like Jordan Taylor, who has reportedly been failing to get separation even against twos or threes. But you put him in, you know, you could look at it almost as using BB between the 20s. Assuming you start at the 25 to 20, and then you bring Jordan Taylor in as a mismatch against a linebacker, then you have two tight ends out there. So you have like three guys that are 6'5 or above, which is incredible to think about. And then the last spot, you could have a speedster like Jeff Bidette, who I want, you know, you think they'd want to keep because last year the Jets tried to poach him off the practice squad and the Vikings paid him $75,000 to stay. So you have that dynamic. So it kind of goes towards what people were arguing before camp, which was the Vikings have three kinds of receivers. Which will they take? A possession guy, BB. A size guy, Taylor. And then a speedster down the field guy, Bidette. That seems to make the most sense.
Yeah, I do think that Taylor benefits from being known by the assistant head coach. And,
yes.
And he knows what he's got there, and they want him for some reason. I didn't see a lot out of him during OTAs. Of course, he was new here, so he didn't have that benefit as some of the other guys like Bidette and BB had. So I have to see more of him before I'm sold, but I suspect the coaches know more than me. I don't know. News flash that might be true, and so I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. They've got him at second on the depth chart for a reason. So, and the thing you didn't mention about BB, you know, when you list all his attributes, is Don BB or BB comes from a legacy of some of his lineage has made the greatest play ever in the Super Bowl. So I mean, he's got that going for him. So if he can just be like his dad and make a
just
you know,
that's all no pressure just come through in the Super Bowl, that's all we need.
You know the play I'm referring to, right? Of course, the greatest play
was
ever.
Was his dad the tight end in the 49ers?
No, he played for the Bills, and the Bills were getting rocked by the Dallas Cowboys, and Leon Lett scooped up a ball and was running to the touchdown celebrating, and Don Beebe came from the length field and knocked it out of his hand before he went into the end zone. It was meaningless play in a blowout game, but it was the greatest thing because I'm a grumpy old man that doesn't like people, you know, celebrating their stuff until they've done it. It was just awesome. It was great.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I think too that he may have solidified the punt return position as well,
which helps. Yep, which totally makes it so much easier to. Become to make the roster as the wide receiver three. I mean, if you can contribute in two spots, they're going to love you.
Definitely. And then you have your article touched on his and I'll let you explain this since I seem to be explaining your takes for you.
That's okay. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Well, you're muted half the time, so I have to pick up the slack. The way that they may implement him, the argument of the wide receiver three position versus having the Kubiak running two tight ends maybe compensating for those amount of catches, and how they might implement BB alongside like Irv Smith Jr., for example.
Yeah, I was talking to our buddy Mark Craig, who writes for the Star Tribune. He's been on our show before. And I asked him, wide receiver three, what do you think? And he says, Irv Smith Jr. He says, that guy's skill set and the way they love to use two tight ends in this, Kubiak does, he's going to get a lot of playing time. He says you don't need a third receiver, then you would see that they won't have as many three read sets and more double wide outs with him and Kyle going down and
11 versus 12 offense or whatever.
Exactly. And then so then you slide in when you do need a third receiver, if someone go on the slot or someone to run a great route on third down or something, you get a sure-handed BB who is going to get open because he's so dang quick, and he writes his precision on route running is just going to get him open, and it's someone that Kirk Cousins can rely on. On top of that, he's got the good hands. He is a smaller guy. One shot across the middle, and he'll be sitting on the sidelines, sniffing whatever those things they break in front of your nose, But
yeah, smelling salts slash smelling salts, methamphetamines.
Yeah. But, all of a sudden it made sense to me. I said, God dang, that makes sense. Why wouldn't you do that? Because then you've got, more player versatility, which I think is huge on trying to get everything covered in a 53-man roster. So I thought that was a pretty interesting take by
definitely. And it seems like that's been Kubiak's thing too, is players that versatility is really key in regards to the offense in general, but making the roster. And then you look back at the success that Aldrick Robinson had, just in terms of he wasn't the fastest guy, he was probably the exact same size as BB, but he'd get open because he was single covered against either a linebacker or a nickel guy. I'm not even kidding, I'm such a nerd, I just got so excited I'm about to pass out based on what you just said. Because you really think it's like a pick your poison situation. You have the yes. two wide receivers who are amazing. They're up there with Moss and Carter, which is saying something. They're not as good, obviously, but wow. We're really lucky in that regard as fans, actually. Yeah. And then you have, there was that clip of Cousins, Sean Borman posted, I believe, on his Twitter, which is at Sean Borman, Boarman, of Cousins after practice, basically just him and Irv Smith Jr. It was like a less angry version of him on the sidelines with Thielen last year. Like, he was using his hands to explain things that perhaps other teams might... Ooh, I shouldn't say that. But you could tell the importance of Irv Smith Jr. just based on that interaction, because right. Cousins was just them two indoors, away from the fans, just working on stuff.
It's got to be why they drafted him and went as high as they did with him. I mean, they always need tight ends. Kubiak's got the reputation of using them, but it gives you such scheme, in addition to position flexibility, scheme flexibility. The looks you can give the defense, at the line of scrimmage with these guys out there is probably all kinds of mix and match and doing everything. I don't dive deep enough to analyze that, but I do expect to see that. He is going to get a lot of action as soon as they get him into the offense and picking it all up, and they're going to give him as much as he can. So he'll be fun to watch on Friday night, just to see where he lines up, just to see how they use him. So,
and it'll be I've touched on this a lot, if the Vikings do make a deep run in the playoffs, I think the main difference between this year and last year and what people will point to will be Kubiak. I look a lot at the difference between the 2014 and 2015 Ravens and the success he had with the offense. I could just play a tape of me saying this, but bringing in that offense from the 30th ranked to the 12th, and the running game from the 31st to the 8th with the exact same personnel. If you apply that concept to this team with the talent they have and some additional pieces, it's really exciting to think about. But I also feel that in looking at Kubiak's history, he tends to lean on tight ends that again, can do multiple things. So he'll take a more versatile tight end in that one that can block but also catch over one that might be just a pure pass catcher. So I have a feeling by the end of the season, this might be Kyle Rudolph's last season with the team. The contract certainly implies that. At least they can walk away without any damage, which is unfortunate because, you know, he's a huge leader on the team, but he's not known for being versatile at all. So we'll see how that plays out, but I could really see that even Tyler Conklin maybe stepping up a little bit.
We're going to need him to. The biggest concern for me, obviously, is David Morgan. You know, we haven't seen him yet, and we really don't even know what's going on to a huge degree. I think he had some kind of off-season issue or surgery. I can't recall, but you know, he never.
It was reported as some sort of knee cleanup. Like they were just going in and taking out cartilage, and they said he'd be ready by the start of camp. And clearly, that hasn't happened.
Never saw him step on the field in OTAs. You haven't seen him yet out at TCO, and it's like that. He's a huge part of that offense. Now, maybe if the offensive line is better, they aren't going to need as much, you know, help as blocking tight ends, and they're going to do more with pass receiving tight ends. I don't know, but it would be nice if that was the case. But
definitely,
you want to see Morgan back out because he always came through. Generally, always, you know, I don't know what his target to catch ratio is or catch targets. I think it's always been pretty good. He doesn't get that many targets, but when he's throwing the ball, he usually comes up with it and does a nice job.
Yeah, I mean, I know everyone is kind of harping on Kyle Rudolph for having a down year last year, but he did catch 80% of the balls thrown his way, which is astounding.
Exactly. I'm going to go on the record and say I'm not ready to say that this is his last year yet. I know the way the contract is. I totally agree with that take. The fact that they drafted Irv Smith and they've got, you know, Tyler Conklin and all this, but you know, it all depends on the cap and how tight it is next year, and it's probably going to be. But I'm not ready to give up on him yet. I think he's the kind of guy that Zimmer really likes, in addition to what he does on the field, but in the locker room.
I think Zimmer's shown that too, that he values that. That's kind of an off the field like determinant of a guy sticking around. I think that was a big part of Anthony Barr's appeal, on top of the fact that he basically does everything you could ever ask a linebacker to do. Looking at the depth chart, Irv Smith Jr. Actually, he is listed second, I believe. I'm going to double check. For some reason, I thought he was listed third. I know that I'd read he was like second or third or fourth at times during camp. Mm-hmm. But it's a really hard position to acclimate to as well. And I'm not one of those people. I've said this before too, but I was really surprised by a lot of the people coming out of the woodwork during the whole Kyle Rudolph contract will they, won't they thing, which dominated the offseason for a couple weeks, that were really anti Kyle Rudolph. I kind of thought he was universally beloved. No, yeah, Irv Smith Jr. is second. Conklin is third. I like him. I understand that he's not Gronk and he doesn't break tackles, but he's reliable and he can, if you throw him, he'll 80% of the time, he'll freaking score a touchdown. You know, you can't get mad at that.
Two years ago, he's the leading touchdown scorer on the Vikings, so.
Yeah. He's in the top three tight end wise statistically for touchdowns and amount of receptions. So
Vikings history?
No, just the last two seasons for all tight ends across the NFL.
Oh, wow.
Fantasy wise, he's not going to get you. I mean, he didn't break 40 yards last year. I think that was the gripe on people. But the point, long story short, is Rudolph is totally a product of what you ask him to do. So
correct.
Blocking, but if you threw him the ball 100 times, he would catch the ball 80. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So if he's not catching touchdowns, that's a scheme thing or a larger issue, I guess. But he comes through when you call on him. Two or three seasons ago when he had all those touchdowns, we didn't have the Diggs and Thielen as we know them now. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's just I don't understand.
It's really easy to grab on him. It's easy to grab one thing that you don't like about him and use that and as your anchor and then say get rid of him. And it's easy to do that. I mean, if you've got to look at the whole player and the whole contribution, which you're kind of you just did in your description of him. So I would say, you know, I think he suffers too. As you know, with his size, he reminds people of Gronk or who's the guy
Travis Kelce.
Exactly, and who are huge, flashy players, and even bigger. I mean, Gronk is huge out in New England because the rest of their receivers have not been as good.
Yeah,
this cat, you know, Kyle Rudolph does what you give him in an offense that has two Pro Bowl receivers on it.
Yeah,
you know, so
and Gronk retired at 29. So what does that tell you?
Exactly. Yeah, you gotta put it all in perspective. You gotta take the whole thing in, and before you start, you know, calling for somebody's head, you're not gonna hear me doing that. So
I was a little surprised from the depth chart, and this ties into the game on Friday where Drew Samia was ranked in regards to the right guard position. I was surprised that I wasn't, I guess. Obviously, Josh Klein's going to start. They brought him in, free agent. He's very – it was one of those who has the higher ceiling, lower floor situations. But in my mind, I always thought, you know, the season would start with Klein and they would transfer it over to Samia. But it sounds like Danny Isadora is having an amazing camp. A lot of the flashy highlights that Alexander Mattison had, the big runs that he had were through holes you could back a truck into, courtesy of – Danny Isadora, which I can't remember if he was injured last year, but it makes me wonder why the team.
I think he was.
Wasn't he? Yeah.
I think he was.
I thought he was. But it sounds like he's having a good camp, which is amazing. I mean, to have depth at that any position on the line at this point was exciting outside of the left tackle position, I guess. So it'll be interesting to see how that line gels. They're going up against Sheldon Rankings, who had 8 sacks last year as an interior defensive lineman. He's kind of a rising star in the league. I'll be interested to see how Garrett Bradbury does going up against him, how he does kind of running and managing the offensive line. They're implementing a different kind of zone blocking than they're used to with Rick Dennison coming in. So, you know, it's the preseason, it's not like you're going to make any determinations one way or the other for the long term. But I think, what are you looking for as things you can check off to say, okay, they had a decent day, I guess?
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing. And that's the one thing about the first preseason game of any season is that we're all jacked up. We're all fired up to see. We're all tired of, as much as the players are tired of hitting their own players at practice, the fans want to see the team against somebody else, you know. And so we all get fired up, and then the starters play one series, and they go put on their hats. So I don't know how much I'm looking forward to see. I his first game, I will probably, you know, be excited to see the team out there. From the first, maybe they'll get 2 series, you know, who knows. But it's more the second game and the third game that you really look for them from that tune-up point aspect. But so I'll take what I can get. But I'm actually looking more towards the second string to see how some of those guys do, like not necessarily online, but certainly the quarterback. And I want to see Mattison. I've been jazzed on him since I saw him in OTAs. And I think he's exciting. I think he's going to be a great backup. I'm hopeful that he gets some playing time this year. And you know, not because Dalvin Cook is injured, but because, you know, they're a nice 1-2 punch. So I'm excited about that. I do want to see maybe on those first couple of series that Kirk Cousins has a pocket to throw from, and that he might even throw some passes. So hopefully it's an extended series and they go down to score. But, you know, to answer your question, you know, I'm not putting a lot on the first string in this first game.
Yeah. You know, I as long as there aren't a lot of, like, delay of games or false starts, I think I'll be happy. But isn't it just the worst when, like, you're so excited for the first game of the preseason – and then they go out and get like a 3-and-out, and then it's over. Like, I remember when the Vikings got Favre, I was at the first preseason game he played, which I think was week 3, and he was out there for like 1 series against the Chiefs, and he just got rocked on like the first play, and then it was over. Like, no more Favre.
That one I get, Joe. That one I get.
You know, it just was like, oh, man, that was so – I completely forgot I was at that game. That was actually really cool to say that I saw the first snap that Favre had.
Yeah, Zimmer's the kind of guy, though, that will, if he's not happy with what he sees, he will he will throw him back out there and say, okay, guys, you know, if you aren't going to get a little bit more intense here and be on the spot and do what we want not see out of you, then you got to go show me again. So
I've seen, like last year, I felt like a few guys on the defense were out there into the second half in the second game, because you could just tell Zimmer was pissed. But, yeah, from the offensive line, I have a lot of faith in Bradbury. I think he having Elflein next to him is tremendously important, like just helping with all the like calling of the formations and so on and so forth. But yeah, like you said, Alexander Mattison, I'm super excited about him. I feel like, you know, there hasn't been a lot of talk about Dalvin Cook just in general. You know, everyone's kind of laser focused on a few different position battles. And I feel like my knuckles are bleeding from the amount of what I've been knocking on during this show, but it would be fun to see him come out and just light things up. I've seen a few articles saying that he could be a dark horse candidate for like rushing leader this year. But you know, the plan was for Bradbury to open these huge holes, and so it'd be nice to see that against a relatively stout defensive front from the Saints, I guess. But yeah, we'll see.
You make a good point about, you know, that they're executing well and they're getting off on the snap count, and Bradbury's doing what he's got to do, because the only thing I heard from him earlier in camp was that he's got to make sure to make the right calls, and because when it comes down to it, those are on him. You know, Kirk can come out and see something different, maybe change something, but that's what he's got to get used to, and that's what he's focusing on. So you want to see that out of him, and you know, I'd love to see him open some holes and just, you know, because we know the passing game is going to be pretty decent if they protect him. And, you know, you'd like to see, I don't even know if I'd put Dalvin Cook in there.
I know. Start. I know. And he's the type of guy that, like, they say, you know, one of those, like, gets lathered up.
Right.
AP style. The more runs he gets, the better he is. Runs between the tackles. That'd be fun. You know, it's I don't want to sound unrealistic and, like, because I was going to say I would love to see some play action, but if they're out there for one series, like, I can't force everything into one thing, even though, like, I've been playing Madden with the computer on watching them beat the computer in preparation for this. But that'd be decent running to set up play action in general would be great. The only other thing that I think is important, and it's not the best way to end the show, but, you know, you're speaking of conflicting reports, some of the special team stuff has been in the kicking game has kind of been all over the place. You know, Dan Bailey's had a bad day, and then he's had some great days, but they were saying the bad days are holder based, and then Matt Weil is had some good days, but he's also struggled a little bit. For a minute I thought they might try to replace him, just because the list of people trying out for holder was as long as the people trying out for punt returns. They had Linville Joseph out there. I think that was just a joke, but still. So it'll be interesting to see just in general. Like, hopefully they'll make some field goals. The punting won't be a complete nightmare. You know, we touched on this earlier, but having a semi-decent punt return game is important just because of how important Sherrill's was the last couple seasons. And so we'll see. I'm just a little worried about kicking.
That's great. Linval Joseph can't get on the field because he had two off-season surgeries, but he's out there holding for the snap, right?
It makes complete sense.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
That'd be
sense,
the most but. Vikings thing ever if he, like, somehow tore the, like, stitches in his shoulder.
Right.
So, yeah, we'll see. It'll be an interesting game. I do want to highlight that we will be doing a live chat on both websites starting about an hour before the game. So that's super easy. You don't need an account to participate, but creating an account takes 2 seconds because you can use your Facebook or Twitter to do that. So hopefully people will show up and chat with us. Most of the team will be there. I will be there. Hopefully I'm trying to get work off, and I'm pretty sure I will. Either way, I'll be there. But it should be a good time. We're going to be doing a lot of post-game stuff, actually multiple articles a day at this point. But also after the game, we're going to be doing a roundtable reaction to it. So that should be fun because a lot of our guys have been writing pieces, camp battle stuff and bubble player analysis and who will make the team and who won't. So you'll get some deep dive stuff you wouldn't otherwise get, I guess is my point. So definitely keep an eye on the sites for that. We'll be doing some podcasting stuff afterwards. So go to the sites or go to purpleterritoryradio.com. That's where we host all of our podcasts and then the podcast of a lot of our partners like Skull Hole. We have Grapes and Gorak is a new one. We also have some Twins coverage from Gleeman and the Geek, Lockdown Vikings, so on and so forth. So if you're a Minnesota sports fan and you're looking for some new podcasts, go check out that site. They're all free. They're all easily listened to or downloaded. So it's pretty cool. But in the meantime, we'll be around. Check out the sites, and we'll get back to you guys next week. If you're looking, if you happen to be in the New Orleans area and you still are looking for tickets to the game, we're running a promotion with TicketClub.com. You get a free premium year membership, and the tickets have no fees, so you don't have to worry about that. And we're also running a partnership with Total Sports Entertainment if you're looking for some really cool Vikings or Twins memorabilia. It's awesome. It's actually really cool. So check those things out. Otherwise, we will be back next week. This has been the Morning Joe's podcast, and skull.